If you read it right, I'm Sarah, and I would be the first to die on a lifeboat.
I'm Amelia, and I would be the goddess priestess of the... Yeah. There was a lot going on in this one.
You're so tired, you can't even claim to be a little cannibal king right now.
There was no cannibalism in this book, Sarah, so frankly I have nothing to say. There was the implication and immediate rejection thereof.
Not even implication, someone was like, maybe we should eat them, and the other person was like, no. And that's it.
Yeah. I mean...
Yeah, so I could tell reading that sentence, honestly, that you were probably not going to be wild about this book.
Yeah, man. Just fucking rode away from that one.
Here's the thing, though. Before we went on, we were like, both of us were like, hey, do you have anything to talk about for the intro? And you were like, no, I live a very boring life and I've never done anything. And
that
I was like,
yeah,
me
too. That's verbatim what
too.
I said.
Yeah. I was like, I live a really cool, sexy life full of, like, lightning flashes and vampires. You know, cool, sexy stuff. But all I could think about was to talk about the escape room that I just crushed with my friends. Oh, Amelia, we did so good. But then I was like, that's maybe not the best intro. We should just hop right directly into the book, which is The Lifeboat by Charlotte Rogan.
But Sarah, but then... is a lifeboat not an escape room of sorts?
Oh, ho, yes, but after an hour, it's not like a 20-something man comes in wearing an oversized t-shirt to be like, yeah, you guys didn't do it. You didn't escape.
Yeah, but in, that's the but in the escape room, at the end of your hour, does a gaunt, haggard, possibly mad sea captain come in and start screaming orders and talking about drawing straws? Because that's my understanding of an escape room.
Yeah, well, you're not wrong. An escape room is basically like, take the idea of Thanksgiving, but then compact it down to an hour, and you have to get out of there. You know? There's just a lot going on.
Wow, I was interested in doing an escape room, and I no longer am. Congratulations!
Here's the thing. I would love to do an escape room with you. I love escape rooms and puzzles. I love solving puzzles. But you are so deeply competitive, and you have disclaimed so many times that you are not sure how you would handle it personality-wise.
I'm pretty sure we discussed my unhealthy competition drive on our previous episode, so I feel like for my own benefit, I should just shut this shit down now.
You're right. A much better running thing is how much you want to eat people.
Yeah, yeah. See, I gotta maintain my brand.
You can hold your head up high with that.
But if it was a competition about eating people, I would fucking win.
Yeah, well, I mean, I might do okay.
I will kill you, and eat you. And that is how I will win.
You're so competitive. You'd be an absolute nightmare on a lifeboat.
Yeah. I mean...
Ooh, boy.
Boy.
Not like me. I would be... too stressed out to ever make any kind of fuss.
You would be the person whose claim to fame was that she did literally nothing, including, like, bailing out the boat, or...
Yes. But would my son survive? No, because I don't have a son.
Yeah, there you go.
That's a reference to the book. Wow, I was gonna say, I was leading up, by the way, with that whole thing to be, like, a joke about how we weren't gonna talk about the escape room, because that's a dumb thing to talk about. But
apparently
looks like
it was actually
it.
A pretty good segue.
All right, turns out. Here, let me just put Stephen Moffat and Mark Gatiss' adaptation of Dracula back
no,
on the
No, okay,
shelf.
But we do need to actually address that, is the thing.
No, it's right. We have to table it, because I know no facts about it, except that it apparently exists and has been in the process of existing for, like, 2 years, and it finished filming in August, and nobody knows when it's gonna come out.
It's just, like, this dark axe blade hanging over all of our heads, and I just can't shake the horrific feeling that no matter what you tell me, Sarah, no matter what IMDb says, Benedict Cumberbatch will be Dracula, and it will be fucking terrible.
Okay, you know what I enjoy thinking about is that somewhere on Tumblr, I guarantee I can find you someone who's arguing that the reason that there's so little information about the Dracula series is because, what? It's not really Dracula. What is it? It's the fifth season of Sherlock that's finally gonna blow the whole John Locke conspiracy wide open.
Have they really not done more than five seasons? What the fuck are they doing?
They're very British.
Arthur Conan Doyle literally wrote the books faster than this.
Yeah, but he hated himself.
Yeah. And instead we get to hate all of them, so...
Yeah. God bless. I had such passionate feelings about Sherlock season 1 and 2, and then fairly neutral feelings about season 3, and then passionate again about season 4, but in the other direction.
Yeah, you fucking dragged me into Sherlock in high school, and then immediately bailed, so that I was just like, I kind of wanted to talk to somebody about this, but okay.
I didn't immediately bail. You took, like, a year to get into it. A year of me being like, hey, literally, please just watch six episodes. Just watch these six episodes. And you took, like, a year to do it, so that by the time you did watch it, I was like, oh, I've been over that for, like, ages. I'm back into, I don't know, Star Wars prequels.
See, the thing is, I feel like you would be totally valid in dragging me for literally never watching or experiencing anything that you ever recommend to me, except the literal instant that you told me about Escape from the Bloodkeep, which involves, like, what if it was a D&D campaign from the point of view of, like, the forces of Mordor. That fucking day I was watching it, so...
Yeah, that was devastatingly fast.
Yeah, and it was so good, and I loved it so
in a way
much.
Where, you know, like, sometimes, you know, you don't want to, like, dissuade people from good behavior, obviously, but there are times when it's just like, oh... You could have, this whole time, you could have been that fast. That was on the table this whole time?
Listen, Sarah, every time you recommend me something involving orcs, yes, it will be that fast.
Mm. I know I recommend to you all your romance novels.
Yeah, and I
if
do-
If I find your romance with orcs-
Fuck, babe, oh my god.
Orc lesbians? Fuck, I gotta start NaNoWriMo
fucking
now. It's like 20- nut. It's like 10 days late, but I think I can do it.
I think
it.
You can do it. You will be bolstered by the sheer psychic force of my will.
Okay. One of them is called Kragnar, and the other one is called Dratskull. And they are competing to be the most bloodthirsty killers in their clan. But, plot twist, they fuck. I can't. I don't know. I'll work on it. I'll workshop it.
I mean, I'm already on board. I'm not even gonna lie. I'm not even gonna make fun of you. Like, I would fucking read the hell out of that.
Plot twist. One of them's like been a goblin this whole time, but
no.
One wearing a really baggy suit.
Oh, boy.
Is that anything?
I mean, goblins and orcs are kind of related, so...
One of them's just a really big goblin, and one of them's a really small orc.
One of them is just two gnomes stacked on top of each other.
One of them is two gnomes stacked on the other, and the other one is also two gnomes stacked on the other, but they're both lying about their identity.
Wow, this is, like, really intense. This is the kind of thing that I feel like would only come out after, like, the orc romance genre has been around for, like, 10 years, and we're just, like, scraping the bottom of the barrel of, like, what else we got here?
Okay, also, I feel like an orc would be, like, honestly, like, four gnomes on top of each other. This is not what we're discussing,
though. This is fucking
though.
Short orc erasure. Shork erasure.
I hate that.
So, is this us awkwardly segueing into the lifeboat?
Yeah, well, what was elegant about it was that we segued pretty neatly into the lifeboat, and then I talked about how we were going to talk about the lifeboat now, and then you grabbed me by the scruff of my neck and demanded we talk about Dracula.
You spent, like, 15 minutes telling me how we were going to open this podcast episode with Dracula. I was not going to make that be in vain.
Well, I just meant, we're gonna, listen, listeners, there's no way we're not gonna watch the Dracula TV show. I hate the book and the people making this TV show. There's no way I'm not gonna watch this TV show.
Oh, man, yeah, I am very hyped for that. But this is me.
I'm genuinely so excited. The only thing I'm more excited for that might, that's gonna come out this year is Cats.
Jesus.
Because I also think Cats is gonna be a fucking... masterpiece.
Hey, Sarah, could you find some little fucking withered piece of your shriveled soul that can still be excited about actually good things, or has that ship just sailed and then gotten crushed by ice in the Arctic?
No, it sailed, but then crashed under mysterious circumstances that will never fully be made clear, as we are always hampered by our ability to know beyond ourselves. What up? Back on the lifeboat.
We did it! Alright, so...
Hell yeah! So, broadly speaking, The Lifeboat by Charlotte Rogan is about a woman named Grace Winter who just got married, and then just got shipwrecked. And now she is on a lifeboat with about 30 other people, not all of them being featured players in this book. It's kind of like in Lost when you're like, oh, there's like a bunch of people on this island, but we don't care about all of them? Okay, cool. Cool.
Cool.
Don't
cool.
tell me what I can't do.
Yeah, that was literally what was going through my head, and I was like, you know what? Yeah, that's pretty much the only thing I got out of Lost, and I mean, I got what I needed.
I would say one of my favorite things about you is whenever I tell you, like, please don't do something, and you just quote John Locke going, don't tell me what I can't do, and then you'll immediately do whatever I've asked you not to do, which is usually like, don't eat that, please.
Yeah, well, don't tell me not to fucking eat it, Sarah. Do you know me? Do you know me?
I do know you.
Do you know my hubris? Do you know my stomach acid?
Yeah, it's not even like a trap at this point. It's not even like, I'm not even like trapping you at this point. I'm just like, I'm just pointing you at knife and you stab yourself.
Yeah.
Hey, when you edit that, can you get rid of the 20-second pause as I try to think of a single comparison?
Sarah, I don't think there's anything I can do in editing to make that work. I think we just have to live with our sin on this one.
Okay, so Grace is on this boat. She is our viewpoint character. The book starts, we understand that she survives and makes it to land and then is put on trial along with two other women, but it's unclear for what and under what circumstances. Then we flash back and we see her account of what happened on the lifeboat and her very specific narrow account, as well as some slight stuff about her backstory that really reminded me actually a lot of Foe by Coetzee. Oh, Christ, you'd think in the intervening 2 months I would have looked up how to say his name.
Really, Sarah? I wouldn't think that either of us would ever look up how to say anyone's name ever.
Fuck.
I mean, really, how do we know how to pronounce this author's name? It could be Charlotte Rogan.
Honestly, I worry a lot about that last name.
It could be the Lif Bot. Language is meaningless.
The Lif Bot?
The Lif Bot.
No, if anything, it's the Lifeboat.
The Lifeboat. This is bad. Anyways.
So I read this book twice, once like 3 months ago, and once earlier this week, rereading it. And I think it benefited a lot from a reread, but I also think I can see why you feel the way that you might feel, which is, do you want to tell us how it is?
Yeah, so there were things about this that I liked. For one, I really liked the writing style because it was very Victorian-esque, or I guess we're kind of more in, you know, the early 1900s at this point. But, you know, it felt old.
Edwardian, baby!
It felt old-timey, which I liked. There was a lot of, like, themes of, like, religion, and there was a lot of emphasis on the female characters. There's a lot of, like, gender stuff. Like, all of the ingredients of a book that I could have really loved were here, but I just felt like the execution I didn't end up liking as much. A lot of it, as you were saying, as a result of, like, the limited narrator, a lot of it is super ambiguous. And at a certain point, I mean, when I got to the end of this book, I was kind of like, I feel like I didn't really get anything out of the experience of reading it that I couldn't have gotten from basically, like, a synopsis. You know, it was a fairly, like...
Interesting.
It was a fairly general lifeboat story. I did, like I said, I did like the writing style, and I really liked... I did like the frame narrative of, having her kind of be on trial afterwards and, like, you already know that they survive. But I just felt like there was something missing. It almost felt like there was a final chapter in the book where, like, everything is revealed and all of these fascinating little tidbits of information are finally cashed in on and, like, you find out what actually happened. And then that chapter doesn't exist, and you're just kind of like, oh, I thought there was something interesting going on. Was there?
Well, I would even say the last line of the book is almost taunting you with the desire to know.
Absolutely. Also, I thought it was going to be gay.
I think, I think you can make, this would be a great book to write queer theory on. Because it's, I think that there's a lot of queerness in the book.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But it's not, and I think it's very, like, easy to read it there. And I think it is meant to be read in places as queer, or at least as ambiguous, but, like, you know.
You know. Yeah. And I think that was kind of what irritated me, is that I was going into this thinking that it was going to be a lot more, like, fun and self-indulgent, but it ended up being much more, like, you know, quote-unquote literary. It kind of felt like it was trying to be this sort of literary experience. And I was kind of like, I mean, I kind of just want, like, these two women to fuck in a lifeboat. Like, is that so much to ask? I'm a simple woman.
Well, I mean, it is possibly too much to ask. There are 30 people in this lifeboat.
I mean, they have to take shits and stuff. They have very large skirts. I'm just saying, it could have happened.
Grace, what are you doing over there with Marianne? Where is she? I'm hiding her under me skirt, sir.
Oh, she was very cold. She just needed to warm up a bit.
I've got several bustles on, so, you know, just sort of shove her up into there.
We've got Hannah under here, too. They're both doing fine.
Yeah, they're both, they're great. Ooh, oh, they're feisty. They're fighting.
Yeah, so that was kind of my overall...
Don't worry, Deacon.
Don't worry about it. You seem kind of disconnected from everything that's happening anyway, so I'm sure you're cool with this.
You... Spoiler warning, you don't do great. Wow, what an unpleasant accent. If I could take a second to sidebar, recently it's come to my attention that I have jettisoned every little scrap of English accent I could fake do. And now it's nothing.
The funny thing is, Sarah, that you think that you could ever do a decent British accent.
No, I'm saying, listen, I don't think it was decent, but you listen to Dick Van Dyke and Mary Poppins and you're like, he's clearly trying to be Cockney. My most recent attempts have been, oh, she's New Zealand, I guess? It's bad.
Yeah, except before that it was like, Australia, I guess? And then before that it was like, a stroke, maybe? So...
Hello, it's my Ben Mendelsohn.
You are incapable of saying anything in any accent except, oi, it's me, Ben Mendelsohn.
Oi, it's me, actor Ben Mendelsohn. I'm here to talk about me role in Star Trek.
See, I want to say... Star Wars, Sarah. Please. Please.
Oh, I don't know. I've never seen... Me and my buddy, Mads Mikkelsen, we've never seen the movies.
Quick sidebar, because this is something that I think about on, like, a near daily basis. Mads Mikkelsen and Ben Mendelsohn in an interview where they're talking about the music video for Bitch Better Have My Money, and it's just Mads Mikkelsen nodding sagely with a smug expression on his face going, I was the bitch. I just want everybody to know that that exists and that I think about it very often.
All right. And then back, oi, and now we go back to the book.
And again, back, like, it's, we're just...
It's me in the lifeboat.
It is...
Oi, it's my... Hi there. Oh, it's my Peter Jackson. This is my New Zealand accent. I think it's okay. I think it's a pretty good New Zealand accent.
I think that anyone from New Zealand would contest that, and possibly
I would
fight
agree
you
with you. And I apologize to everyone from New Zealand. This is me trying to do Liverpool, and then I just sort of wander off.
So what were?
Hi, it's me, a Beatle. It's me, Ringo Starr.
I'm desperately trying to stop this, Sarah, in case that wasn't clear in subtext.
I think we should talk about the idea of the soul survivor narrative and what it does for POV.
Yeah, let's do that, but in any voice but that.
You want my Kermit impression?
No, okay, let me clarify. In your normal human voice,
why are you being so cruel to me in my good accent?
I don't know. I guess I'm just like the embodiment of male oppression and also God and possibly the sea?
Yeah, all at once, baby. All at once.
Yeah.
This book, as I was mentioning before, reminded me a lot of Foe, the kind of companion, kind of response novel to Robinson Crusoe that I read, where the protagonist is a woman who was shipwrecked, and there's a big emphasis on narrative and storytelling and who tells the story and in what way is the story told and what parts of the story do you get to have. Like, Grace is a character who quickly, like, you see she's kind of manipulative.
Oh, super, like, manipulative.
Super
to the point where I was like so sure for the entire book, and I mean, I guess this is a spoiler for something that doesn't happen, but I was like so positive that at the very end it was gonna be like, 'twas I who sunk the ship or something, and then I was like,
oh, she just like Kaiser Sose's away.
Yeah, God.
Well, she has like, yeah, there's not a lot of information given about her life before the boat, or, there's some very broad sketches that you need to know. She's in financial straits, her father killed himself, her mother went crazy, her sister is a governess, and Grace is like, I'm not doing any of that. But she is a very difficult-to-know character. Like, it's hard to tell even to what degree she is manipulating the audience and the readers, and
I was like, kind of assuming that the degree was very...
yeah, but like, when and where and how,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Because she's also quite unflattering to herself in several places, in ways that don't seem like she's putting her, but maybe it's that sort of fake truthfulness, or it's like you selectively disclose the truth so that you can kind of smuggle in lies.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, this book was super interesting, and like, I'm glad that I read it, but I feel like I just wanted different things for it than what it wanted to be, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think it definitely wasn't, it wasn't like an action adventure, and it wasn't even one where I'd say Grace herself is, well, I was gonna say a very passive character, but with like several notable exceptions.
And there were no furtive hand jobs underneath the petticoats, and frankly, that is the only standard that I have for a quality piece of literature.
Wow, you've read very few good pieces of literature.
Yeah, it fucking sucks, Sarah. My life is hell.
Quick question. In the NaNoWriMo, are the orcs wearing petticoats?
No, that's not, is it? That's something. Yeah, that could be something. It's a whole new subgenre of the orc romance.
Like, it sounds wrong at first, but then it feels right.
Yeah, and then I'm like, nice.
Were you gonna say nut?
No, but yes. Like, the word, that wasn't the word that came to my conscious mind, but it was the word that existed in my spiritual mind at all times, so.
So it was interesting because I'd already read The Lifeboat. I thought, well, then I'll kind of pick up another book to read that's similar, that I can kind of, might be an interesting contrast. So I read Life of Pi by Yann Martell. And, you know, it's quite a famous book. I always meant to get around to it. I never did. Dad tells me that the movie is quite good, so maybe I'll do that, too.
No, movie, I
And you've
the
read
movie.
The book, right?
Yeah, I read the book, but in, like, fucking high school, so I remember nothing. But I have seen the movie, and I remember more of that.
It was quite good. I liked it a lot. And it has a lot of talk about God as well, so you know I'm there for that. It was remarkable how much it deals with the same central themes of The Lifeboat in a lot of ways. Not even just the idea of, like, what will you do to survive? Because every survival novel is basically like that at its core. Like, spoiler, that's the thesis of every book we've ever read.
Yeah.
But, like, also very specifically, like, what does it mean to have an event happen for which there's only one person who exists to tell the story? I was thinking about, and I was like, it seems actually kind of quite common in these shipwreck narratives that there's this structure of the one survivor and they are conscientiously telling the story. It's not just a recounting for us. It's the character themselves is an author.
Yeah.
Robinson Crusoe consciously writes his own story. His story it's like his account, you know, it's fake journalism. It's him writing it like it's like really happened.
Except then sometimes I felt like the author was like kind of forgot that it was actually his journal. And then I was like, what are we doing here, William?
Hey, William? Hey,
wait, was that his?
Willem? Hey, Daniel? Wait, hey, Daniel fuck. Defoe?
No, I'm so sorry. Oh, I'm so sorry. And I didn't even get Willem's name right. Listen,
yeah, you messed up Willem Defoe
did fucking Ocean better, okay? He just did.
Yeah, he, in the Lifehouse, he did it. He did it. So many people at the movie theater I work at have walked out of the Lighthouse, which I think is really funny, including, I told you this, but this is like my favorite review I've ever received. I was talking to a man who walked out of the Lighthouse because he hated it. And when I asked him for any clarification, like, oh, like what happened? Or like, what would you think? Like, what was going on? He just went like, I mean, come on. And then he walked out and that was it.
That's amazing. And, like, and also that was literally all I could think of as I went into the theater to see the Lighthouse. And it did pop periodically into my head as I was watching it. But,
but back on point to the life aggressive single person narrative,
yes.
Where it's like the Odyssey. The Odyssey, very similar. It starts in media res, where like someone's like, yo, hey, what's your story, bro? And he's like, let me tell you. And it's like the story of him telling the story is the story of his shipwreck adventures. And because he's the sole survivor, he's the only person who gets to say what the story was.
Wait, are you talking about the Odyssey or the Rime of the Ancient Mariner?
The Odyssey, because it's also the Rime of the Ancient Mariner.
Yeah, that's crazy. I hadn't really made that connection before.
Yeah, and I was even thinking of, like, small things, like Hamlet being captured by pirates. Do you remember that happens in Act 4? Because that happens in Act 4 of Hamlet.
Yeah, fucking crazy.
But then, like, he's the only survivor of that, and, like, those two chuckle fucks die. What's their name?
Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
Okay, do you want to know how up in French history I am right now? I was, like, Robespierre and Goldenberg? I don't know who Goldenberg is, but yeah, the architect of the French Revolution did die at the hands of pirates
in Hamlet.
In Shakespearean time. Yes. But Life of Pi has this frame narrative of the fictionalized version of the author getting this story from Pi, you know, it's his life, and then at different points listening to Pi tell the story to someone else and then contest the idea of what is a story, like which story matters, what does the truth matter, when there's only like when, and it poses like the question very explicitly, if there's no difference to the practical outcome and there's no new information to be gained from either story, what does it matter which story was true? Why not? Why shouldn't it be the better story that's true?
Mm-hmm.
And Foe, single survivor, shipwreck, the only other people in the story who would tell it, Friday, basically, are not in a position narratively to tell the story. So we just have this one person telling us what happened. And it's like, yeah, all these shipwreck stories, they all have this obsession almost with narrative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really interesting point. And I almost feel like, I think there's like a lot of reasons for why that might be. And, you know, part of it could be that like, in many ways, like, all shipwreck stories tend to be similar in what happens, you know? Like, you shipwreck, mm-hmm. you have to fucking do shit to survive, and then you get rescued.
You're shipwrecked because you shot the bird, and now the ghost crew is coming to man the ship, yada yada, we've all seen it.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird that happens in, like, literally every shipwreck narrative. Like, I just feel like maybe there's something new that we could do with the genre.
I just feel like it's weird that Robinson Crusoe shot the bird and the bird came to life and said, stop selling people into slavery. And he's like, I don't understand what it means.
I don't get it. Yeah, you know, and I think that, like, it's in a way because, like, the shipwreck narrative is oftentimes a very religious one.
Mm-hmm.
Like many, you know, really brutal experiences, it causes people to, I think, kind of both go inward and outward at the same time of it's a very isolating experience, but it also is kind of expansive one in that it makes people kind of more connected with, you know, thoughts that you don't have as much cause to think about when you are, you know, safe at home and have all of your needs taken care of. And I think that the fact that it is so personal, and it's about, in many ways, people's personal journeys through this hardship, could be a, you know, a theory that I would put forward as to why, like, all of these shipwreck narratives are so based in the idea of, like, personal recorded narrative. I feel like we're really...
Well, there is
really,
something... There is something... Go, sorry, you say your thing.
I was just going to say, I feel like we're really giving a teaser on what our final episode of this this unit is going to be, which is probably us just being like, oh, yeah, weird. Common themes, oh, weird. Yeah. Just kidding. We're going to try and be smarter than that, but God knows if that'll work.
Yeah. Mine's going to be entirely about whether or not you should drink your piss or not.
Mine's going to be about how every one of these books should have been lesbian and explicit.
Damn. And about orcs.
And about orcs. I don't ask for many things. That's three things, and I don't understand why I'm not being catered to.
You bring up the concept of this almost religious spiritual experience of being shipwrecked, and this format does have a lot to in common with, like, what I associate with, like, kind of Christian narratives of, like, it intensely personal revelation that changes everything and is about your personal journey far more than it's not a community journey, it's your journey, and it's about how you changed and grew and brought that back with you from the desert or from your trial or whatever.
Yeah, and I think that, like, part of that is maybe because, like, you are existing in one of the most hostile places to human life, you know? We talked a bit about that, but, like, the ocean does not give a fuck about anything, you know? Mm-hmm. And you are just kind of alone in this thing that doesn't care about you at all. And I think that that definitely, like, plays in with, like, weird religious themes in a really interesting way.
Especially since there's so much, like, it doesn't care about you, but it's not mean to you, you know? It's just something much larger than you. And also common in a lot of these narratives is, like, the sort of awe at nature, you know? Being like, yeah, it, you know, the sun is baking me and I'm being, you know, caked alive by salt, but, like, food fell from the heavens, and I've never been happier than I am eating right now because I've been so hungry, you know? It's like life whittled down to its absolute most basic, but, like, because it's so basic, everything is so enhanced. There's no, like, oh, hope my apartment's doing good, you know? It's all just like, I was hungry, now I'm not. Yes. This is euphoria.
It's like, what fucking husband? is he alive? Who cares? I have a strip of dried fish.
I have a strip of dry fish. Yo, we found some more fish. Everything we did was morally justified. Yeah. And actually, another theory that I was thinking about just as we were talking before before the recording was the Island of the Lost theory, because the last book we read was a shipwreck narrative. It's different. It's not Soul Survivor, which, you know, again, the Lifeboat isn't. We're using Soul Survivor in kind of like a one person POV way. But the Island of the Lost, in theory, you have a bunch of different narratives you can draw on. A lot of people were shipwrecked, and in theory a lot of them could have left behind records, but most of them died, and not everyone wrote about what happened, so it does end up being winnowed down to the account is based off the people who chose to write about it and the people who survived. You know, people who survived is probably the number one winnowing factor.
Yeah, I hear that helps in terms of authorship, is if you're actually alive, it just definitely makes your text more marketable and also existing.
So clutch. Yeah, that's like rule number one for NaNoWriMo. You have to be an existing, living creature, which I think is kind of exclusionary, but, you know.
I know, yeah. It's really unfortunate, but maybe next year. The ghost section of NaNoWriMo will really kick off.
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah.
And the orc section.
I was literally distracted by orc lesbians, being like, Regency orc lesbians, there's something there.
There is something there, and it's, there's, what more do you need?
a plot. But that's not the point. the point is that even in Island of the Lost, where it's not a literary invention, it's things that really happened, we still also get the same kind of thing where it's like, well, it's actually what was going on in, like, everyone's mind. We don't know. But we kind of know what's going on in the captain's mind, because he wrote about it in his diary about how sad he was. And in the way that, like, these soul survivor narratives in fiction really do mimic that, with just the idea of, like, everyone else died. So my story is the story you get, and all the other stories you could have gotten don't exist anymore, because those people died. And it's, like, another way to kind of drive home this idea of that, I feel like, in fiction, is to be not only have characters die, but to have viewpoints die. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get the viewpoints of the other people in Robinson Crusoe's ship. You can never get them. They're gone.
You can't and have them. Because they're just the racist one.
It's just the... No, although they were all on a slave expedition. Let's not go crazy.
Yeah, that's fair.
But it's like, because they're not real people, you don't mourn them because they died, because they're real people. It's like, what you lose is what they would have contributed to the narrative, which is their perspective. And sort of in the absence of that is where the narrative can convey a sense of loss, just by having this extremely limited perspective, and a perspective that, in The Lifeboat, is kind of not exactly obsessed with what it doesn't know, but is very open about what it doesn't know.
Yeah.
Grace doesn't know why the ship crashed. She doesn't know what's going on with Hardy and this other guy. She doesn't know what everyone's deal is, you know?
Yeah. And that's, like, a really interesting thing that, again, I don't think I liked, because it was, like, what makes reading satisfying is that you discover information at the end that you didn't have at the beginning. And I was sort of like, there's so many interesting things that are happening here. I want to know what's going on. And fuck you, don't laugh at me for wanting to know. It's a perfectly valid thing, author. Charlotte.
Charlotte? Charlotte Rogan, sorry.
Maybe it's Rogan, comma, Charlotte. I mean, we just can't know.
I feel like it's definitely not that.
Maybe The Lifeboat is the author.
The title of the book is Charlotte Rogan.
Yeah, it's very mysterious. Like, oh, you want to know what that means? Fuck you.
I will say, one of the things I liked, Grace honestly reminded me a lot. Man, this book reminds me a lot of Foe. In ways that I'm not realizing. I didn't realize until I was had to kind of talk aloud about it. Where it's like, yeah, really wish you'd read that book. I feel like you might have, you either, because that book was truly opaque. So this one is like, I think she gave us quite a lot of information. Good job, Grace.
It almost makes it more dissatisfying, though, I think, when... Because again, I feel like this established the expectation of some kind of revelation, and then there just wasn't one. But yeah, you know, the whole book, it was just kind of a weird thing that... It just felt like it was kind of in between everything that I expected it to be. And again, like, there were things that I was disappointed in about it, but, like, overall it was still very interesting and well-written, so.
Yeah. There's definitely, it seems almost, oh, hey, do you want to know who on the back of my book one of the blurbs is from, saying that it's a deceptively simple, can't read it, this quote, because the library stuck its sticker right there, to explore our all-too-human capacity for self-deception? Do you want to know who said that?
Well, I'm looking at my copy, so... But I want to hear you try to say that...
Yeah. J.M. Coetzee! It all comes together. The author of Foe was like, this is a good book.
Yeah, that is really interesting. Probably could have more to say if I had read that book.
God, well, you don't super need to. But, I mean, if you ever wanted to revisit Robinson Crusoe without reading Robinson Crusoe...
Why would I ever want to revisit Robinson Crusoe?
That's right, you don't need to, because it's stamped itself indelibly on every other shipwreck narrative, exactly. So you're good.
So yeah, again, I think overall my thoughts for this book were that it was kind of an interesting experiment, and just because I wanted different things from it doesn't necessarily mean it was objectively bad, but I did not enjoy it as much as I was hoping I would, and also it should have been gay, and that is an objectively bad thing, that it wasn't. That's my hot take.
I think this book is almost clinically detached from its own subject matter in a lot of places in ways that helps and hurts it. I think it's one of the books that it's deliberately set up in a way where you don't need to worry about the main character's survival. Or the survival of some other characters, because it's kind of clear from the beginning that they must get rescued at some point. You know, that's like the opening is them on land, so we know they make it. And because of that, it kind of it does interesting things to one of the central moral questions of the novel, which is what would you do to survive, by presupposing they do survive, so think about that. You know, and I think it's an interesting way of redirecting the priority of your reading, but not necessarily a way that makes it more exciting.
Yeah.
It's something that it takes survival off the table as the main question, like, will they survive? And kind of moves it to what will they do that helps them survive, with a side of like, hey, you know, we're all fundamentally unknowable.
I mean, the thing is, though, we don't know that Grace isn't an orc.
The thing is, she's not ever explicitly described as not being an orc.
So in a way, maybe this is the first entry in the orc romance genre.
I would argue it's not very good at being a romance.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah, well, I'm just trying to think of, like, how can I make any lesbian jokes about this? This book, I'd say, you know what, I'm going to stick to my guns on this. I think this book is queer, but in a English major way.
Exactly.
Which means, like, it is.
I'm like, we didn't fucking go to school for this shit. Come on. Like, let them
it is,
fuck.
It's not satisfying to anyone.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. I'm like, stuff like that really does make me feel like, who exactly is this written for? Like, it kind of almost, and like, this feels mean to say, but it almost feels like that type of writing queerness into narratives feels like it was written for straight people in a way, you know? Like, and
interesting.
Because it's so palatable and, like, you know, and safe, and like, it's almost looking at it from the outside. In that it doesn't even really engage with it because, like, the characters aren't engaging with it. So I think that was another reason why I did actually find that a little bit frustrating, because it felt like this book was full of potentially queer characters and they were never actually given space to be queer in the text.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say that there is space made with the question of Hannah and Mrs. Grant, not that their relationship is made explicitly romantic, but things like Grace wondering, like, would there be a trial at all if Mrs. Grant had been a man?
Yeah.
And things like the jealousy that she ascribes to Mary Ann at certain moments when she thinks that Hannah is gonna, like, give her attention to Grace, and Mary Ann wants Grace's attention. And this sort of way that almost all men are incidental except for Hardy, and even he is there as an antagonist force, as like a protagonist and an antagonist, but like not as a person.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
This is a story of, like, it's a lifeboat that's predominantly women, and it's like a bunch of women making decisions in ways that are not necessarily satisfying and don't necessarily, like, cover any of them with particular glory. Anyway, I don't know if any of that's queer, but that was my opinions. I think I talked myself into liking this book a lot more.
I'm still sort of like, I can't believe that I didn't like this queer-coded book about women surviving in a lifeboat after a shipwreck more than I actually did, you know?
I do. I know what you mean. Like, I feel like I should love it, but I just like it. And it's kind of a cold, it's a respect more than a like.
Exactly. Yeah. It wasn't a very
that's what it is.
It wasn't a very enjoyable book, but it was a very interesting one, and I liked what it was going for. So yeah, that's kind of my
You know what, actually, I'll counter it. I think it was enjoyable. I think it was an enjoyable read and a fairly fast one. And one that is, I would say, interesting enough to be worth picking up. If you listen to this whole thing and you're like, yeah, on the whole, it still sounds interesting, I would definitely say pick it up. If you're like, wow, that sounds fundamentally unsatisfying, you are correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's like, I guess you're kind of hoping that's a feature, not a bug, but it might be both a feature and a bug.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, this has been Cracked Spines. You can find us on Twitter at SpinesCast, on Tumblr at crackspinespodcast.tumblr.com, and you can shoot us an email at crackspinespodcast@gmail.com. We will receive it in 2 to 3 business months. And yeah, if you like what we're doing here, you can go ahead and throw a rating up on whatever podcasting app or platform you prefer. And, you know, if you want to reach out to us about your favorite shipwreck novels or also your favorite genre of orc romance, I am so fucking desperate to hear more. Please tell me.
There must be orc romance.
I mean, I feel like there is, but I think it's bad because I know for a fact, I literally have looked into this in the past.
I feel like I could find orc erotica easily, but not orc romance.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, I would still be down for orc erotica, but like lesbian orc erotica, I feel like that doesn't exist. This is going to be, just so everybody knows, this is going to be the hole that I will fall into for the next 5 hours tonight.
Not me. I'm going right to bed, because my success with the escape room really tuckered me out.
Aww.
Not to brag, but we did really good in the escape room. Actually, I will brag. Okay, so it's, like, supposed to take an hour long, and our group finished in 47 minutes, and only 15% of people finished that room. So, not to brag, I'm literally the best escaper that's ever been.
And you only
don't
ate
look at my track
one of
record.
Your comrades. So, like, statistically speaking, doing pretty good.
Hey, this was a lifeboat scenario. We brought up cannibalism, but then promptly shot it down.
Again, just so disappointing.
Don't pretend it's all the other stuff in the book that you're disappointed by.
Yeah, this has all just been subterfuge.
Next week, I'm excited for this one. I haven't started reading it yet, but I know you finished it already.
Yeah.
It's Titanic. It's a book. It's a book about the Titanic.
It's a
Night to Remember, which does sound like a beautiful rom-com, and maybe is? I don't know. Haven't started it yet. I hope it works out for those crazy kids.
Yeah, you know, I think that one thing I know about the Titanic is that things just turned out really great.
Yeah. They mentioned the Titanic and the lifeboat a lot. Namely, like, once they were all in the lifeboat, they were like, well, the Titanic went down, like, 2 years ago, and a lot of people died, but once they were in the boats, they were fine. So surely now that we're in the boats, we'll be fine.
And also, like, once you're in a lifeboat, what else do you fucking talk about? I mean, really?
Well, apparently in this book, you talk about what made the ship go down, and no one knows, including the audience.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So anyways, join us next week for that.
Join us next week also for our brand new podcast, which is called Dracula, and it's about the TV show Dracula, and maybe the BBC documentary about the TV show Dracula. We don't know. The BBC refused to confirm or deny. That's a real fact.
Yeah, and once you're done with Dracula, be sure that you join us for our other podcast, which is Petticoats and Short Swords, and...
Ooh, that's so good!
Yeah. And yeah, it's going to be our orc lesbian erotica review zone. And I, for one, am so excited.
Oh, does it have to be? Listen, I'm not even joking. If we could find one orc romance, one orc lesbian romance that's a published novel, I promise we will read it for this podcast.
Yeah, we will do a unit on it, and it'll just be 5 episodes of us rereading the book, and each time we just give our new hot takes. Yeah, I'm fucking down, babe.
What about a unit where we read every existing orc lesbian romance, and if there's not enough to fill out a unit, we have to speed write a story?
Fuck. Yeah, that's it. That's perfect.
That's it. That's it, babe. That's it. That's it. That's it.
All right. I'm glad we did.
This has been Cracked Spines. Whatever, lifeboat. We're talking about Pride and Prejudice, but one of them's an orc, and the other one is an even bigger orc. And that one's Elizabeth. Darcy's a tiny orc.
Darcy's the fucking smallest orc. People think that he's a bunch of gnomes stacked on top of each other, but he's not. He's just really small. God, I love this story.